Thank you, Al. The work I'll be presenting is something which emerged out of, I guess, some consultations in the NSF-funded iPlant project. And my co-authors are Jim Holland with ARS in Raleigh, North Carolina, Ed Buckler, and I guess Jim's student, Xiaoyi Heng, at North Carolina State. So this goes back to something I've presented in the past, is my question of whether we need to think about modeling systems. We're doing genotype to phenotype. Are we talking about five genes, 50 genes, 500? You know, if there's 25,000 genes in Arabidopsis, how many of those do we actually have to look at? And this also carries over to what Scott Chapman was saying, that my previous work with gene-based modeling and of others has been going from known major loci, so thus at the few gene into the hypothesis, and then and using the known major loci mainly to predict phenology. But evidence from maize suggests that there's polygenic control, and there's a very nice paper by Ed Buckler and others on the genetic architecture of maize flowering time. And sort of the punchline on this is they took this very large maize nested association mapping population and analyzed it, and they found no evidence for any single large QTLs for flowering, and instead they found lots and lots of small QTLs. And so they say a simple additive model, these QTL effects, but with very small, individually small effects, work quite well. In contrast to the kind of genetic architecture that's been described for selfing species like rice, Arabidopsis, and I could add to that, you know, beans, wheat, soybean. So what is this nested association mapping population? Well, one of the things I'm learning as I talk to people about QTL analysis is doing a single population with 150 lines just doesn't give you the genetic power you need to really identify meaningful effects. And so in the maize community in the U.S., they developed a set of populations. There's a single female crossed to 26 male parents and 200 lines. So we're looking at about 5,200 lines. These have been evaluated now and at least in 11 environments for phenology. And then also, because it's maize and there's so much interest, there's a large number of markers, and the particular analyses that were done were done with 1,200 markers, but I think there's now about 50,000 markers, which basically means they can land on top of the gene. You know, it used to be, well, with 1,200 markers, your QTL might still be quite a distance away, and now, like, as I understand it, they're basically able to land on the gene. And I should say that these NAM populations have proven to be a highly successful research platform, not just for phenology, which I'll discuss, but for many other traits. Here's from Ed Buckler's paper in Science in 2009. So here are the QTL effects. They're significant, and here's the effect in days, and the gray ones are ones that had a negative effect, and the black ones are ones that have positive. So you see, and here's the frequency of the QTLs, and so you're talking about lots and lots of QTLs, but with very small effects. A half day, when you get out to things with an effect of 1 day or 1.5 days, they're almost none. So like I say, this is very different, say, from the notion in wheat, where you've got say three or four major vernalization loci with large effects, or the PPD genes. So to look at this with modeling with the NAM population, so I look at days to anthesis, and as I mentioned, we've got six locations with two planting dates each, except for the location in Puerto Rico. And Homestead, Florida, and Puerto Rico were winter planting, so we got short day lengths. And so basically, what we're looking at is this issue of predicting flowering versus estimation of gene effects. Again, this sort of, you can go gene to phenotype, or you can go phenotype to genes. And in this case, we want to use the models to help us get from the phenotype to gene effects. And if we go down, the fundamental hypothesis really is that our genetic parameters will remove a lot of the environmental variation that confounds the conventional QTL type analysis just on the raw trait. So if you just do a QTL analysis on days to flower over 11 locations, obviously you've got differences in temperature, photoperiod, more subtle things about management, and we'll come back to that towards the end. And then the other thing is that presumably, if our model coefficients have any physiological meaning, the QTLs can be described more in terms of their physiological effects rather than just saying we have a QTL which changes or, you know, which affects days to flowering with an effect of 0.5 days or 1 day. And so this is sort of the, you know, the basic hypothesis that these genetic parameters will show strong QTL effects and that they have a more mechanistic interpretation than the traditional sort of field trait-based QTLs. So under this, you know, there's some challenges. Is it better to analyze raw phenotypic data or use the models to reduce these environmental effects? And of course, there have been previous research. We've heard some of this, the barley work, the work with maize, and also this excellent work done on sorghum physiology. A key issue in this study is the efficiency when you're dealing with very large data sets. And so some practical issues for the data set. The crop management data, I basically only was given planting dates, nothing on irrigations, fertilizations, row spacings, populations. The weather data was only for the growing season, which meant I got very poor estimation of initial soil temperature, which for north temperate maize can be a serious issue. There were issues of multiple formats, so there's some work there. I did get the information these were single row plots with 12 to 25 plants. So again, there's some questions on the reliability of phenology data when you're in small plots, and they were unreplicated. And there, as I mentioned before, this very large, we're looking at about 55,000 data points, although there were many missing data points due to a poor establishment. Okay, and the work I'm gonna describe is based on the series maize model, which has parameters for the short PT0 for short day length, thermal times, and particularly there's one for the delay. And there's a filicron interval, which works out to be essentially another form of thermal time. And the delay in development of photoperiod is greater than the P2-0, the critical short day length. And the work I'll describe is with P2 and Fendt. There's also the temperature effects, and let's say I should mention that anthesin and silking dates are not distinguished in this model. So I used the CSM series version of the maize model, and so we had this question: how do I estimate model parameters for 5,000 lines? Well, the DSAT package has a GenCalc tool, but it's got a graphical user's interface. You control it with a mouse. And I have to build 5,000 files and calibrate them. That's a lot of work with a mouse. Fortunately, working with Kelly Thorpe, but we found a nice solution. There's a tool for Python called PyWinAuto, which allows you to take over the Windows interface and actually use a program to transmit the window click. So this is a nice tool. And that worked pretty well. It still took 2 minutes to optimize the line. It worked out to about 7 days of processing with the desktop I had. So obviously I checked the initial data for consistency and did a little bit of initial calibration and went through, and here are the results. This is my 5,000 lines by 10 to 11 locations. So it looks like it worked pretty well. Let's dig into this a little bit. Just do the simple regression. We're explaining about 90% of the variation. But, I always like to put in a generic cultivar. Those of you who looked at some of my previous papers, what basically this does is if we use a single cultivar, we could have explained 80% of the variation. So really the genetic calibration, all that work only explained an additional 10% of the variation. And then there was like 10% unexplained. And I looked into that, and there's a large effect of environment in this, and begin to think, well, there's something fishy going on here, and I check that. So watch this. As I click, it'll step through the paired years at different locations. So you can see the first one. If you can see the letters, this is Columbia, Missouri, and the data are more or less on top of each other for the 2 years. So that's good. That means there's a fairly small environment effect. Look at Aurora, New York. We've got two sets that are offset, maybe by a mean of 10 or 15 days. And it turns out that the 2006 data set, or the field trial, they planted it when they thought the soil had warmed up enough, and it got cold and it got wet, and the suspicion is that the seed just sat there, and so we've got a big seedling emergence effect. But unfortunately, the people who provided the data didn't record emergence date. So I'm looking at what I can do to correct this for sort of further iterations. Homestead, a little bit of offset. Clayton, North Carolina, just beautiful. The 2 years are right on top of each other. And Urbana, Illinois, again, a large offset. So there's some questions, you know, what went on there. And we need to go back and contact the people who conducted the experiment, see if they can help us with this. Okay, let's move on quickly to the QTL analysis, and I'll confess this is the part I'm not an expert on, but QTL analysis basically detects chromosome intervals or genetic loci associated with quantitative traits. You can think of it as really just like a giant regression problem. So you've got a phenotypic trait, in our case a model parameter equal to A plus B, and just do a linear regression testing different combinations of the markers, coded as zeros or ones, and then you do a stepwise regression to identify which loci explain the largest part of the variation in the trait you're looking at. And this really is the sort of the inverse of the process I've used in gene-based modeling. And so here's this is the main take-home slide. For P2, the photoperiod sensitivity, 7 QTL were detected, and the QTL analysis explained about 52% of the variation in this parameter. But note that the largest QTLs only explained 5% of the variation. So this is back or consistent with the notion that in maize, none of these QTLs have humongous effects. For the filicrin interval, we had 17 QTLs detected and explained about 71% of the variation. But again, the largest QTL explained less than 2% of the variation. And here's this is probably the most important piece of information out of this. So previously they'd done QTL analysis on the raw phenology data, and they'd identified a series of QTLs. And these are the QTLs that are shown here for days to anthesis are ones which were also detected for the photoperiod effect or the filicron effect. And these ones in the red boxes are ones which Coles et al. Identified as being related to photoperiod sensitivity. And this is indicates there was a significant correlation between the effects of the QTL for days to anthesis or for photoperiod sensitivity. So we've got one correlation not significant, but two of them significant. And I think importantly, then where there was no known photoperiod QTL, we in general did not see that the P2 showed a significant correlation. There's just one example here, so this might merit revisiting. And sort of the inverse situation with the filicrin interval, no relation with photoperiod, which for this locus, which we had hoped. Non-significant relation, no relation, and just one here showing a significant relation. Because again, our hope is that the model coefficients are sort of orthogonal, that the photoperiod effect would be a pure photoperiod effect, and the filicrin interval effect would be a pure filicrin interval effect. And I still have quite a few questions. I think this work of Coles was done with a subset of the NAM population, so they may not have picked up all of the QTLs which affect phenology and in particular related to photoperiod. So just going into the conclusions, you know, the fundamental hypothesis of our work that the genetic parameters affecting phenology will show strong QT effects because the modeling process eliminates environment seems to hold up, but there's still a lot more analysis that needs to be done, and that thus the QTL should have a mechanistic interpretation. I think that also holds up, and for example, it'd be less confounded with issues of things like seedling establishment. I won't go through this, but there's plenty of room as I work through this. I realize there's a lot of work that be done to improve the phenology in series maize, and also improvements in how we estimate the parameters, and including even just having a command line optimizer would have been much better than dealing with the with a tool of the graphical user's interface. And so I say in conclusion, the modeling assisted QTL analysis works. I would warn the modeling community that genetic research is moving towards even larger populations. We have a proposal for a cotton mapping population with 50 crosses by 200 lines. And we really need to encourage the people running these field trials to improve their management and document their work and so on from there. And I finally close with a question: does a simulation model approach allow more efficient analysis than conventional QTL analysis of the raw phenotypic data? It's not clear, and I think at the moment they're complementary, and you really need to work the problem from both ends. And then just to acknowledge the people who've helped me out, Kelly Thorpe with Python, Mike Gore in interpreting some of the NAM population, Tony Hunt who developed GenCalc, the Maize NAM community for allowing me to work with their data, and iPlant, and in particular Steve Welch for sort of bringing me as a modeler in contact with the Maize NAM data set. So thank you.